is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is The Urologist Speaks. Thank you for joining myself and Dr. Wesley Francis, my co-host, who's a surgical oncologist and Bahamian general surgeon. Welcome, Dr. Wesley Francis, as always.
Thank you, Dr. Pinto, and good evening, Bahamas. It's great to be here and to have these conversations with you.
So today I would like to first, on a personal note, wish my uncle Larry Lawrence, Dr. Lawrence Davis, who is 90 years old today. So I think that gave me the idea. Let's talk about longevity. Let's talk about how we're going to live longer and live better. And just a shout out to my uncle Larry, who's my favorite uncle, by the way, who in days where persons who have a darker hue weren't getting PhDs in nuclear physics. So he is a pioneer in the education field. He's one of the original Valley Boys. He's one of the longest standing Rotarian in the Bahamas. He's done a lot for the community, a lot for the sports community, a lot for Bahamas Olympics, Bahamas basketball, etc. He's a true Bahamian and icon and a legend. And he came from humble beginnings, as did my mother and their siblings, where my maternal grandfather never went past grade 3 in elementary school. My maternal grandmother never went past grade 5 in elementary school. And in those days, grade 3 and grade 5 are not what they are now. My grandfather, when he was still alive, used to always remark he had to teach himself how to read. But he saw the importance of education, and that's what I always try to strive and impart to the youth out there, men, young men and young women, boys and girls, that education can be a key to take you, and Dr. Francis has spoken about that a lot, from the humblest of beginnings and the most destitute of beginnings to the highest of heights. See everywhere you never thought possible around the world, have opportunities you never thought possible. My maternal grandfather had 11 children. He made sure all 11 went to university. His brother unfortunately died in his prime, leaving 12 children, and that was D.W. Davis, who the school is named after. And my grandfather also helped put those 12 children through school. So he actually put a total of 23 people through school. So my hats are always off, is always off to him, and he always instilled the importance of education. So what has education done for you, Dr. Francis? From where you've come to where you are now, did you think that it was always ever possible?
No. I mean, I think for me, education, and I believe I've said this before on the show, and I mean, I always encourage young men, young women, education has been the passport for any and every destination, any and every success in my life. If it were not for education, and I always brag and say a government school education, a good government school education, I would never have gone to medical school. I mean, because that was the foundation that gave me the fundamentals. I went to COB, which is UB now. I didn't have another opportunity. That was my opportunity. And it became a great opportunity. That led me to med school in Jamaica. And then the whole world opened up after that. And so, but it was those foundational years. Ridgeland Primary, S.E. McPherson, Government High. The teachers that poured into me. Your father is one of the teachers that really poured into me and saw potential and, you know, allowed me to seize the opportunities. And, you know, just to be able to excel. And I always say, you know, I became a competitor in education or in learning. And even to this day, I'm still a lifelong learner. I'm still now doing courses in something. But you have to be a lifelong learner, and I think you have to be very curious. I think curiosity is what allows you to pursue excellence. And in doing so, it opens up doors. And the fundamental education, I mean, that primary school education, that education you get at home, the primary school education, the education you get in the community, all of that is kind of what is the secret sauce that's baked into what you eventually become.
And we always talk about the future, the next generation being better than the one presently and even better than the one previously. We don't talk enough about generational wealth. There'll be persons and families that are successful, and then one generation later, two generations later, all of that is gone. Part of generational wealth is actually instilling the values of the importance of education.
Absolutely.
Wealth, education is wealth. Knowledge is wealth. And we're not just talking economics, but it does go off into the branch of economics. But we're talking about being worldly intelligent, seeing the world, knowing about the world, having opportunities that you never thought would have been possible, having job opportunities.
Right.
We may come back home because we love our country. We might go through hardships as pioneers in certain areas, but to make a difference so that the next generation doesn't have as hard as it, we had it. But we can go anywhere in the world. I've had opportunities. Even I wasn't even actively looking for a job, but once I did my fellowship,
right,
I was offered a job in Hamburg, Germany. I was offered a job in Amsterdam. I was offered a job in Dubai. I was offered a job in New Zealand. If I really put myself on the market, I probably could have gotten a job almost anywhere.
Right. You know, and it's about being credentialed, right? I always say to, you know, to the residents who I've been charged to you know, oversee their career or their education, their surgical education, that credentials matter, okay? Credentials matter because credentials, which is really a product of the education that you would have gotten throughout the years, it opens doors for you. And people can't take away credentials.
And something that is very fundamental important, and we've spoken about this in the past, it's not as important as to where you go to do your first degree. It's more important where you do your last degree, your MBA, your graduate degree, your getting your PhD, getting your medical degree. So if you can go to a good college that is well-rated, you don't have to go to Ivy League school. You don't have to put yourself $80,000 in debt every month. Yes.
Listen, UB is free.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can excel it. You can excel at UB.
That's the greatest opportunity anyone can get.
And then you can go off and see the world as a graduate student.
As a graduate from there.
You don't have to get into Harvard. And by the time you finish Harvard, you're $340,000 in debt. And you're no greater likelihood of getting into a good graduate program than someone who went to a good college and got the same A's and B's.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think sometimes we take what we have for granted. Some students who are actually even less fortunate may choose to go and to schools that are no-name schools in the U.S. over UB, which, you know, can give them the same fundamental education to allow them to then access these Ivy League, postgraduate universities. And UB, COB for me, gave me some fundamentals. And so we encourage all the young people out there, you know, if you have an opportunity to go somewhere and it's funded and whatever, that's great. But if you don't, you don't have to. You can use what you have. And what we have is actually good.
And there's so many scholarships available.
Oh, yeah.
Innumerable scholarships available. If you excel and you do well and you even top it off with some community service and you're shown to be charitable with a good character, the world is your oyster. There is no limitations. From my past, I got a Life at Key Foundation scholarship.
Yeah, I had one of those too.
I got a scholarship from Borco out of Grand Bahama, and I never had to pay for my first degree. I never had to pay. Then for the government, I didn't have to pay for my medical school. I didn't have to pay for my postgraduate studies in general surgery, then urology, and then doing a fellowship. I never had to pay a cent.
And you know, the thing about it is that a lot of people who go to medical school end up in some serious debt, right?
Yes.
Especially in the U.S. We're fortunate. We didn't have to go that route. Like you, I had Life at Key Scholarship. I'm a proud Life at Key Scholar. I had City Market.
Oh, yes,
City Market.
I also got City Market.
Right.
I also
got City Market scholarship. Yes. But, you know, these were all available to us, and it paid off. It helped us well. We didn't leave medical school with any great debt. And then we came and we worked in the government services and then went off, you know, and became specialists in an area. And we credentialed. We became credentialed in a certain area. And nobody can take that away from you. And you just grow from there, right?
I mean, my brother went to a university in Pennsylvania. It's not a big-name school, but it's an accredited good school, above average in terms of ratings of universities and colleges across the United States. And then he went off and actually did internship. He did gastroenterology at Columbia University, which is the seventh-ranked medical school in the world, not just in the United States, in the world. My sister took a different route. She went to Harvard, went from St. Andrews to Harvard. She excelled at Harvard, got 2 degrees, including economics, summa cum laude. She went on to graduate from Yale Law School, top of her class. I don't know of any other Bahamian who's graduated top of a Yale Law School class. I remember when I went to, being so proud, going to her graduation, and she was walking hand in hand and side by side by Bill Cosby. Now, looking back at it now, but it's Bill Cosby was getting a PhD from Yale Law School, and she was having the college flag, holding the college flag and the Bahamian flag in her hand. So you can do great things from this small little 21 by 7 island.
With the resources that we have.
Amazing things.
I always say that there are sufficient resources to allow you, if you take the opportunity, to do well. We were talking about longevity, right? And you mentioned your uncle. And it's a theme of this show to really talk about lifestyle. And I don't know if you there's a... there's a concentrated areas out there where we have people who actually live long. It's called blue zones. People talk about the blue zones, right? And what's unique about the blue zones is that these people, they live forever, right? And it's based on certain principles characterized by diet rich in plants, consistent physical activity, strong social connections, low stress lifestyle, and a sense of purpose. And if you think about all of those, right? I mean, we talk about those on a regular basis on this show. Stress, how stress can actually shorten your life, right? How physical activity and constant movement, right? Not a sedentary lifestyle. And all of these things actually lead to longevity. And then diet, of course, right? If you consume the proper diet, and yeah, we have a lot of issues around diet, yeah? But if you make the proper food choices, maintain an adequate weight, avoid certain, animal fats and all of that, you can see how all of this coming together. And this is what is characteristic of these blue zone areas, right? and they live into almost 100 and even more. And when you think about it, if you look at it, we interact with patients all the time. This is characteristics of the patients who are on the island. Okay. Yes. They're constantly physical activity. They're more plant-based too, right? And if they are eating animals, it's stuff that they grow.
Yeah,
it's organic.
They live off the land.
They live off the land.
Land and the sea.
Right?
And they walk everywhere.
They walk everywhere. They do have a sense of purpose, okay? Because, I mean, culture is really important in passing on the islands.
More of a sense of community.
A sense of community. Of
family,
right?
And more sense of pride in our country.
And they live long. And they live long. And you see them and they're healthy. You see them, they come to see you in the clinic for the things, you know, ailments that they may have, which are the usual ailments associated with age, but they are healthy for their age.
And when we talk about, we're all hoping maybe we live to 80 or 85, but if we modify our behaviors, we might be able to extend to even 95 years old. So we look at high blood pressure control. We talk about proper exercise, nutrition. Weight management, that's extremely important for an obese nation such as ourselves. Adequate quality sleep, that is imperative in terms of getting 7 hours of quality sleep for your coronary heart health, our cardiovascular health. But when we talk about longevity, we always talk about what are the main killers. Obviously, it's coronary artery disease, it's cardiovascular disease. The vast majority is going to die of a heart attack or a stroke. But when we look at the advent in the last several decades of interventional cardiology in terms of angioplasty, in terms of stenting, a lot of persons that would have died at 65 are now going to live to 90 because of that. So medicine is advancing in the form of cardiology. But when we look at our nation and many nations, we don't talk enough about really, what is the highest risk of death for a person in the Bahamas, for an adult in the Bahamas? It's not heart disease. It's not hypertension. It's not chronic cigarette smoking. It's not cancer. It's not one of the innumerable cancers that are plaguing our land. It's actually end-stage renal disease. The average person in this country lives 2 to 5 years once they're on renal dialysis. And there's so many reasons for them getting on the renal dialysis, and we always speak about it doesn't happen in one day,
right?
It doesn't happen in 1 month, it doesn't even happen usually in 1 year. The number one risk factor and one of the number one causes of end-stage renal disease is uncontrolled blood pressure, and that is a silent killer, and everybody's heard it, the silent killer of uncontrolled hypertension.
Right, and the thing about it is that hypertension, if you have it, essential hypertension, it can be controlled. It's easily controlled. All you have to do is monitor it. and there are medications out there. And not only that, certain lifestyle modifications may even lead to reduction in your blood pressure. Certainly exercise, certainly maintaining a healthy weight, avoiding the salt in your diet. All of these things can actually reduce your blood pressure. But the thing about it is that you don't feel it initially. And so we discount it. I always talk about people discounting things. And because we don't feel it. It's not a pain. It doesn't hurt.
And when it does hurt, it's too late.
It's too late because your kidneys are gone by that time. Your eyes are gone by that time because you can't, you know. And then you also have, you know, heart disease associated with also. Because it is something, but it's so easy to control.
I mean, we always talk about, obviously, the heart and how sensitive it is to uncontrolled blood pressure, or the brain in terms of the changes that you have over time with uncontrolled blood pressure. But we look at the kidney. The kidney is very sensitive to high blood pressure. With every pump of your heart, for both of your kidneys, collecting on average 20 to 25% of that blood pumped out. And that's how sensitive the kidneys are to being destroyed when you have sustained, uncontrolled blood pressure.
If you think about it too also, Dr. Pinto, is that we have two kidneys. And the good Lord gave us redundancies with his kidneys, right? And you can imagine that you take away all of your reserves, essentially, over this period of time. And because we have a lot of renal function in terms of reserve. But it's so sensitive to blood pressure. It reduces that reserve and reduces the function to the point that it doesn't work anymore, you know? And that just goes to show you how important or how crucial dealing and maintaining your blood pressure, you know, becomes.
And likewise, diabetes. When you look at systemic diseases, non-communicable systemic diseases, whatever is going to affect your left kidney is also going to affect your right kidney. Yes. So whatever is damaging one is also damaging the other. Even though you may have a spare kidney, both of them are under right. siege.
Right.
And they're slowly dying before your eyes and you don't even know it. And not to talk about what's going on with your blood vessels, what's going on with your heart,
right?
What's going on with your male member, your erections are going to be are the first thing that is going to fail. And then we need to look at how do we monitor our renal function. And there's too much, and even our physicians are guilty of this, just relying on creatinine. Creatinine is not a reliable indicator in terms of a serum blood value, in terms of a range of creatinine for giving us an idea of someone's true renal function. It gives us a broad idea,
yeah.
But in terms of, we need to look, first of all, at the estimated GFR, glomerular filtration rate. And if we see that glomerular filtration rate slowly falling, you know someone's in trouble. Even if your glomerular filtration rate and your kidneys are functioning at, let's say, 70% or 65%, if you're 58 years old and you may live to 88 years old, by the time you're 84, your kidney function may be at only 15% and you may be on dialysis for the last 5 years of your life. So we need to use estimated GFR. In fact, in the last decade or more, we don't even really look at creatinine. We look at something called cystatin C, which is a protein produced by all the nucleated cells at a relatively constant rate. So unlike creatinine, the cystatin C's production is not influenced by a person's muscle mass, which is very important, particularly when we're looking at a kidney function of elderly persons where the muscle mass may be very atypical. Particularly as someone gets older, they start to lose muscle mass. Estimated GFR, when you're looking at creatinine, estimated GFR, also you have to look at the racial-based multipliers. So estimated GFR for a man of African ancestry is not going to be the same normal range for when you compare someone who's Caucasian.
Our family physicians and family practice providers need to be educated on those things, right? Because I think the average fellow out there ain't really it doesn't mean much to them. And so creatinine, yeah, is what most lay people would understand and follow. Not that I'm saying that anybody can't, but certainly I always say that healthcare is based on a relationship that you have with your family physician. And it's a state of where you have that initial contact and a state of continuous monitoring. And all of those variables that you discuss now, the practitioner or the provider would be following over time. And sometimes we just think about just a snapshot, like when we just get one set of labs, that's a snapshot. But it's really over time that we need to look at these things. And if people actually just see their family doctor once a year, even if it's just once a year, and you're hypertensive, you think about it. Think about the access that people would have, right? One, you have NHI, so you have access to a family practitioner, right? And you also have the drug plan. Okay, so let's say you're hypertensive and you need drugs. A lot of those drugs are on the drug plan. So again, the taxpayers, we're already paying for all of this. And people have access to this and they don't use it. And so, you know, we're encouraging people now who are listening to us. Please, the access is there. It's available. Use it. And then because we need to be constantly monitored. And you talk about creatinine, you talk about statin C and all of that. The providers, the burden is placed on the providers to now follow that up. right? And keep people healthy.
And it's important that when we're looking at blood pressure control, you want to have your physician needs to be able to fine-tune that blood pressure. That means
absolutely.
You need to monitor it at home, and you need to come in initially when you're on those medications to see if you're on the right dose, if you're on the right medication. Unfortunately, some of those medications can cause horrible side effects.
Absolutely.
And then we can overshoot. You can cause the blood pressure to be too low. So someone can try and solve one problem and create even a worse problem where someone has postural hypotension. They're so lightheaded when they stand up. When they're driving, they're almost passing out. They feel nauseous and unwell.
And this is what the monitoring is about.
Exactly.
Right? This is the monitoring about. We don't, I always say, you know, if you had one car that you had to maintain, just one car, you couldn't buy another one, just one car, how much time would you get that car serviced? You know, if you buy any new car now, or even a used car, you get a service a couple of times a year. But the one car, which is your body, which you can't trade in, you can't buy a new one, needs repairs more often than not, but you refuse to go in to the mechanic or to the provider to take care of yourself. And I think this is the awareness that we hope that our listenership would take on.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Far too often, young men in particular feel like they're invincible. I always say that all the time. They don't care about their health. They don't tomorrow. They don't care about consequences. They're living in the moment. They're living for that moment pleasure. They don't know what that pleasure can cause them in terms of grief and harm for the next 25, 30 years or for the rest of their life. There are far too many men who don't want to use a condom. They're being very irresponsible. There is still HIV out there. There's still hepatitis B, C, D. There's still herpes. There is no cure for herpes. Do you imagine you can get herpes and every time you have a stress in your life, you can have an outbreak. There's HPV, the most commonly form of sexually transmitted disease. There's syphilis. There's chlamydia. There's so many things. And we're not even getting into unwanted pregnancy.
Right.
So you're not in a committed relationship. You hardly know this young lady. But you're putting yourself at risk of having to pay for the next 21 years for a child with a woman that you don't know at all. And you got to protect yourself. There are a lot of women who are unscrupulous. There are a lot of men who are unscrupulous. You could look at it from both sides. There's some women who will try to see that you're getting somewhere in life. They're going to try to hook you. They're going to say, you know what? If I can get a baby off of this one, then maybe for the next 20 years I can live on Easy Street. So you got to be careful out there. You only got one life. There are too many men who wish they can take back that moment where, you know what, they wish they use a condom. They wish they didn't go and sleep with that particular woman.
You can't take it back.
You can't take it back. After the 20th herpes outbreak in a 5-year period, they can't go back. They're full of rage and anger at themselves. You know what? Use that anger and rage to speak to your cousins. Speak to your nephews. Speak to those in your church. Make sure they don't make the mistake that you made. That is something positive that can come out of something very negative. And I think far too many people make mistakes and they stay silent and they don't want, obviously they have those that they love. They obviously, if they think about it, don't want those who they love and care about to go down the road that they went through. And that includes even ending up in Fox Hill prison or getting into a life of crime or getting into a gang life. There is no future in any of that.
No.
Crime is not a career. Crime is going to end one way or the other.
Well, yeah, you're so right about that. But because people, it's in the moment, right?
Even if it means don't get caught.
You're right. In the moment.
But in the
That's
end,
the thing.
Even if it means breaking your mother's heart. Or,
right.
Yeah.
Which happens, right?
Over and over and over.
And regret is a serious thing after some time, right? To you having made those decisions. And so this is why we have to be responsible and really understand the consequences of our decisions. And think about it. I mean, you know, if you don't take care of your teeth, you get periodontal disease, right? That's a decision that you make. You didn't take care of your teeth, right? If you practice unsafe sex, the responsible, and you're not responsible of that. The consequences of that is, again, as you mentioned, all of these are communicable diseases, right? And again, unwanted pregnancies, and then you then bring that child into a situation where, you know, less opportunities, less for that child to then grow into, right? And culture that may not be so very wholesome. And then you continue the vicious circle. And again, if you fail to go and see a doctor, or you're hypertensive and you don't take your meds, what are the consequences of that? There are real consequences of that. Your kidneys fail, right? and so we could see how these things happen because of our choices. We make the choices. And, you know, I have a good friend that always say to me, listen, if you make your bed, you got to know how to lay in it.
Yes. And when you're young, you're stupid and you're foolish and you just don't see what can happen tomorrow.
No.
That's why it's always important to have mentors. That's why it's very important to have older cousins, siblings, neighbors that you listen to and listen to the stories and the mistakes they made so you don't go down
and mentorship. Mentorship is about passing on experience, you know.
Very much so.
Because you don't have to experience everything for yourself.
Yes.
You could learn from other people's mistakes.
And reading is also a wonderful way to gain knowledge. We'll speak a little bit more on the other end of the break. This is Urologist Speaks.
Nothing beats a Chikchani challenge. On September 27th, we're bringing the action, a 5K course packed with 20 thrilling obstacles. Start and finish at Fusion Superplex with energy, fun, and excitement all around. First time? No problem. Try the Chikchani Light version, built just for beginners. Got kids? Ages 3 to 7 can take on their very own Chikchani Kids Challenge. And this year, we're turning 10. So grab your team, mark your calendar, and come celebrate with us. Visit ChikchaniChallenge.com to sign up today. Thanks to our sponsors, Fusion Superplex, Guardian Radio 96.9, Kalina, RBC, Advantage Insurance, Party Pilots Rentals and Events, Fincastle Media Group, Powerade, Calic, and Art of Graphics.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
You try to rest, but roll with the best. For all your printing needs, there ain't no one better, no. For posters and banners, magazines and flyers. For window decals, greeting cards and newsletters. No job too big and there's no job too small. You name it, we can print it, just give us a call. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located at the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back. This is Urologist Speaks with Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto, and I'm joined, as always, with my co-host, Bahamian surgical oncologist and general surgeon Dr. Wesley Francis. We're talking about health in general. We're talking about longevity. I mentioned, again, happy birthday to my favorite uncle, Dr. Lawrence Davis, who has his PhD in nuclear physics, who's celebrating 90 years old today. So we're all trying to get to 90, and my Uncle Larry is a good 90, still driving, still active, still out in Rotary, still going out on the basketball courts to support the younger men in the prairie of St. Francis Church, prairie grounds of St. Francis Church and the basketball court there. So when we talk about our country being so unhealthy, Dr. Francis, obviously the physical is obvious. The obesity we see everywhere, from young to old, male and female. We are an obese, overweight nation. And there's so many reasons for that. We talk about the sedentary lifestyle, the Western diet, the acidic diet, the fatty foods, the processed foods, the red meat, the fast food. We drive everywhere. We don't bicycle. We don't walk. We don't spend enough time exercising. We don't have enough time to eat right because of economics. A lot of healthy foods, unfortunately, are more expensive than unhealthy foods. But we can be the healthiest nation on earth, where our diabetic rate goes from where it is now, 1 in 7 being either diabetic or pre-diabetic for adult male and female, to maybe 1 in 20. We can cut down our cancer rates for prostate cancer, colon cancer, breast cancer, through lifestyle modifications, through dietary changes, through behavioral modifications. We can be living longer. We can get the average Bahamian to live to 85 years old. But if we don't look at the other levels of our unhealthy nation in terms of the social ills, in terms of the stress levels, we don't speak enough about the mental health of our nation as a whole. The stress is an overwhelming problem. Studies have shown as many as 70% of adults at any one point are dealing with significant stress in their life. And for many, they feel very isolated. There's no outlet. There's not enough support groups. Particularly, unfortunately, because we have a very matriarchal society in the 1960s in the Bahamas, 60 to 70% of children were born within wedlock in a nuclear family. Now it's the opposite, where about 30% are born in a nuclear family with both parents married, and 70% are born to unwed mothers who, unfortunately, the vast majority of them have little to no support. So they're living a very stressful life. Many of them, unfortunately, got pregnant at a young age. A lot of them did not achieve the academic level that they wanted to, or the career that they wanted to get into, because they were sidetracked with a child they didn't expect. Again, let's get back to using protection and being responsible and looking at what can happen with your future.
Again, choices, right?
Yeah. Choices. I mean, how many women wake up and they're 28 years old and they don't know how they had 4 kids with 4 men? And it's not going to get any better. But at least, you know what? You made difficult, bad decisions. But let's make sure that your daughter doesn't go down that road. Let's make sure your son doesn't contribute to the degradation of our society in terms of nuclear family by changing the trajectory that you have and making sure that your offspring go in a completely different direction. So when you're dealing with stress, you're going to have sleep disorders. You're going to have chronic fatigue. You're going to have the too many of us that are burnt out. We're going to have gastrointestinal issues that are manifesting because of it. Your mental health can actually manifest with physical pain. It can be so painful you don't want to get out of bed because you just have nothing to live for, nothing to enjoy in your life. There's an inability because of technology to disconnect from a society that's controlled and dictated by technology. The average adult looks at their cell phone over 2,000 times a day. There's so many
screen time.
So many of us would be absolutely lost if you have a survey and say, what one thing can you not do without in your life? Most persons are going to say their cell phone.
Yeah.
They'll be completely lost.
Which is a myth.
It is.
It's a huge myth because, I mean, we don't need all of that connectivity on that level, right? We need more wholesome connectivity, right? Where we have strong social bonds with real people, not on social media. You know what I mean?
So I mean, in 1950s, 1960s, we might not even have had a rotary phone, but we had a sense of community.
We could talk to people.
The children were raised by your neighbors and by the family. Everybody was an extended family. Everybody looked out for one another. Everybody wanted the best for each other. But that is gone for the vast majority because of crime, because of distrust, A lot of us, we go home, we don't even know our neighbors. We batten down our houses at night, and we live in isolation. And we're too fractured as a society because of that. And we need to change that. We need to have more community self. We need to have more outreach. We need to have more clubs. We need to interact with those in our neighborhood. We need to have more church organizations and groups to bring the community together. And that can make a lasting impression and a very impressionable 8-year-old who never knew his father, or a 6-year-old who is basically raising herself because her mother has 3 jobs just to make things go by, to get by. So we need to find an answer. It is not just the physical unhealthiness of our nation. It's the social, it's our judicial system is in disarray. How can someone who, as a 35-year-old with 3 kids and a wife, doing everything right every day, going to his job, paying his bills, sitting up with his children to do homework, and then in the middle of the night he wakes up to a gun to his head, they tie up his family, they rob his kids are gone through psychological trauma, having nightmares, their school enrollment falls because they don't want to go to school, they're afraid to leave the house, and then you want to know why he's stressed, even 2 years later, why 3 years later, and even when they catch the person, a typical scenario is it doesn't get to court for 5 years, or if it does get to court and someone's convicted, they get a very lenient sentence. During the time, that same person you saw with a gun to your head and in front of your children, threatening your life, is out on bail, on an ankle bracelet, hanging out with his other criminal friends on the street, smoking weed, not doing anything but creating more devastation in our society. This has to stop. We cannot have a revolving door where persons have no consequences for creating hell in our society, where right now we as a public, a law-abiding public, are the ones who are actually in jail. We're the ones with the barbed wire fences. We're the ones with the guard dogs in our yard. We're the ones with the chains and the alarms and the bars on our windows, and we're the ones who are scared to come out at night. Where is our society where an elderly woman is afraid to put clothes on her line because she's going to be attacked or the clothes are going to be stolen?
You know, I always say, man, it's individual responsibilities, right? A community is just people. Community is people, right? And people that get together that form a community. And as an individual, each of us has his own responsibility. We have responsibility to take care of ourselves and then to take care of our community or develop the community for everyone to have an environment where we can prosper in. That's really what community is about, right? But if we all become so selfish and only self-interested and do the things that that we're gratified by and not have a sense of this community, then it becomes a problem. The community falls apart because we all just become individuals who make decisions in our own self-interest. In general, that's really what it is. So when you start treating your neighbor as yourself or looking out for your brother, I think that's when the community gets better. And it starts with those fundamental units. That's when, as an individual, you get better. As a community, you get better. And then, that extends to as a country.
Crime, lawlessness is a greater cancer in our society, on the fabric of our society, on the future of our society, than actual cancer.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of, you can correlate, or you can actually look and compare what cancer does to an individual to what crime does to a community, right? I mean, it metastasizes, it finds its way, right, into all the fabric of that community and causes decay.
I mean, we were both for decades at Princess Margaret Hospital, and every government clinic
we would... I'm still at Princess Margaret Hospital.
Yes, I will say that. Right. But we would go, and our And many times, we first people we have there is we see guns. So we realize where our society has come, where we have people with automatic weapons from the prison. Five guys with automatic weapons. There's a prisoner with chains on his wrists, chains on his ankles, shuffling away around, coming, and they'll be because we want to get them out, and they're making all the nurses feel uncomfortable. They're making all the patients in the waiting room feel uncomfortable. Many of them are malingering, saying whatever, making up symptoms just to have a reprieve and get out of the prison for a little while. But you can think about the cost. So you have five good men being paid to watch one horrible man.
One guy.
How much does it cost to jail somebody versus actually allowing that person to have a scholarship, or allowing that person to have an education, allowing that person to maybe, instead of struggling to work while they're in school, giving them three wholesome meals a day? If we put more money into positivity, we can curtail persons going down the road to crime. How much does it cost our society to actually get justice as well?
There's a significant cost to all of that, right?
A murder trial, how much does that cost the government?
It's a huge amount, I'm pretty sure. But this is how societies deteriorate. But I keep saying, and I always try to put a positive light out there, there's a lot of hope still in our communities, right? There's some good people. We still have some very good Bahamians out there looking out for their neighbor, who's trying to and wanting to grow their community, and proud of their culture and proud of the people that come out of their local communities and what they do. And we got to continue to try to foster that. Unfortunately, all of these problems, people are going to choose a crime, and yes, we have to punish them. We have to take them out of the regular society, and so that means we need to have prisons, and we got to keep them in there, right? Because those are bad people.
And right? Eventually, they're going to get out.
Well, yeah, because you
can't lawfully get a job.
The thing about going to prison is that you hope that you could rehab somebody, right? And that's the whole idea. It's just not to lock them away, but to hopefully try to rehabilitate them. And they've changed the name because that's the thing, right? You just can't lock somebody. Well, it depends on the level of the crime. Maybe you just get rid of them completely, right? But crime is just a function of poor choices, right? And to rehabilitate somebody, you got to make them aware of how poor the choices were and the consequences of such. And then in that, if they get some insight, then you could correct and change their lives. There are many people who went to prison and who came out of prison, rehabilitated, not always through an intensive program, which is welcomed and encouraged, but because they realize that, listen, you know, this is not a good life to live, and I can do better on the outside when I do come out. And then when people do come out, you know, obviously you need to find a way to integrate them back into the society so that they don't feel like, you know, that one problem that they had damns them for the rest of their life. Because they just, it's recidivism, right? They just go right back into the whole thing, right? So there's a lot of social programs. But I always say, right, education is important. Education is the bedrock of any society. And education is health. Health is wealth. And it goes in that way. That's the process that we have to do. And we have to continue to focus on education, focus on our young men and dealing with, you know, mental issues, anger, conflict resolution. We can solve problems by maybe sitting down and having a discussion about it. Rather than, well, we don't throw a bottle no more. We don't throw a rock anymore. That's the hard days, right? People pull out a gun. And I don't know how come guns are so easily accessible, right? Well, I probably know why. But, I mean, it's just crazy that it is. Right?
And then even you'll read the papers, you'll go online, you'll see persons who are caught with guns caught with bullets, even in the commission of a crime, and they're paid out to pay a fine, or they get a very short sentence or a commuted sentence. I mean, there is no fear of being caught with a gun. There's no fear of pointing a gun at not just a typical Bahamian on the street, but the police.
Yeah, it's all about incentive, right? If you change incentive, you change people's behavior. If I have a gun and I get caught with a gun, I obviously have a gun for a reason. I don't have a gun just to have it in my bar, have it on me, but this is something either for my protection or either I'm up to some mischief or whatever. That, you know, that's why people have guns. And if you get caught with it and it's against the law, obviously, if there's some tough sanctions against you or penalties, then you think about twice about that the next time. And also it sends a message to the other guy who has it, right? Oh, I don't want to go and have that same problem or the same consequence of it. So change incentive, you change people's behaviors. And that's, we have to start to think in that way and perhaps be choice architects. Help people make better choices. And if it is that you become choice architects, then you engineer programs to make help people make better choices.
And if all you're going to get, if you are caught, is a fine, and your whole business is based on criminality, provide you with money, you're going to go more into criminality to pay that fine or pay for your high-class lawyer to get you off on some technicality. There has to be consequences for immigrant smuggling. There has to be serious consequences for the smuggling of guns into our country and ammunition into our country, but there aren't. If you can charge somebody $10,000 to bring them in from Haiti, and if you get caught, all you're going to do is get a little bit of a fine. You have so many $10,000 from this one, $10,000 for that one. The fine means nothing, absolutely nothing. And we need to change the way we look at combating crime. We need to be more preventative. I remember many years ago, I read a study done on the inmates, male inmates at Her Majesty's Fox Hill Prison, and they found almost 80% of inmates on remand or incarcerated were actually either physically abused or sexually abused as a child. So let's stop all the physical abuse that's out there in our society. Let's stop all the sexual abuse that's out there in our society. Why is it on the books where you can go and rape somebody and only get 7 years? You can go to your neighbor and be raping a five-year-old for 5 years and you can get 7 years. Where's the value on our females in this society? All the lawmakers have mothers. They all have grandmothers. They all have wives. They all have daughters. They all have aunts. Why do they put so little value on a woman and their virtue? We as a society need to put the most vulnerable of our society are our young girls. We need to protect our young girls. We need to protect our young boys. It's the environment that's going to shape them. We can turn their path from one direction to the next by protecting them, by having outlets for them to be protected. For too many of these women who go from one man to the next trying to get money, turning a blind eye to the fact that this boyfriend, quote unquote, is molesting their 11-year-old or their 14-year-old, they need to be incarcerated for a lengthy sentence as well. We need to discourage that grievous behavior. You're pimping out your own child. That's too common in our society, where you have a mother pimping out their own daughter for money. Yeah. Where is the change going to happen? And it's not going to change by going sitting up in your church clothes and listening to a sermon that doesn't touch anything or change any way you look at life or treat your neighbor or anyone else.
The change is going to happen when we as a community stand up for what we believe in, right? The laws are brought about to Parliament. I mean, that's where our laws get changed. And then we have a judicial branch that just executes the laws that are put through by the parliamentary branch, right? That's the state of our government. And if we want something changed, we as a community have to you know, have to be stakeholders in that change, and we have to advocate for that, right? And so, yeah, I hear what you're saying.
I mean,
but if we want to change that, we as a community have to demand that. We have to demand it of our politicians. They're the ones that write the law, that bring the law, right? Yeah, judges, and they execute the law that basically gets written in Parliament, and that's the way it's done. So when we make our choices in the ballot box, right, we need to now start to think about, well, these are the people who represent us. Do they truly represent our values? What are the values that we want to espouse? What are the values that we want to be a part of Bahamian culture and be representative of this country? And, you know, that's what we have as a community have to do it out there. So it has to be, we have to do it, Greg. We have to do it. I mean, it's not going to drop from the sky. It's not going to be like manna. We have to do it. And if we continue to sit and do nothing about it, then, hey, and allow politicians to do whatever they feel like whenever they get it, and then every 5 years we decide we can change something, and we don't hold them accountable during the times that they are in there and let them know that this is what we want, then we'll continue on this road and we'll continue to slide. But I believe that we can do it.
The average Bahamian is under tremendous stress. On so many levels. I mean, many of them have just post-traumatic stress that they aren't able to deal with, or they just hide deep within, and it just manifests itself at any moment where a young boy will just
lash out. Because we don't really focus a whole lot on mental health. Yeah, we talk about physical health a lot. Mental health is a serious thing.
Poverty in itself is a stressor.
Well, poverty, yeah.
Not knowing where your next meal is coming from, not knowing what your future is going to be like, not knowing... Living in a house, sleeping on the floor, water seeping in, toilet overflowing. It's just too much for too many Bahamians. When you look at, there are two broad-based causative pathways that can link poverty and mental illness. The first is a social causation pathway, which, according to this pathway, persons who live in conditions of poverty have increased risk for mental illness, and that's doesn't have to be explained, because they live with the constant stress of financial insecurity, food insecurity, housing insecurity. They lack a social support network. They're more likely to experience and be exposed to violence and to crime in their poor communities. They're often have greater physical challenges as well, related to higher incidences of obesity, hypertension, diabetes, and other non-communicable diseases, higher risk of having cardiovascular diseases, right? So when these persons in poverty, growing up in poverty with all this stress, they're likely to die younger. They're likely to have a stroke, likely to have a heart attack. And then you talk about the other pathway, which is the social drift pathway, by which persons with a mental health problem tend to drift into poverty because there's not enough in terms of mental health outreach in our society right at this point. So they're likely to drift into poverty during the course of their lives, and they're often more disadvantaged because of their mental health, and they're more stigmatized, and they're not going to get the job, they're not going to get the promotion. If mentally they need a week off or 5 days off, most employers are not going to be very sympathetic, but obviously, if you have a viral illness or gastroenteritis or whatever, that's something that they can understand. But they can't understand that someone can't make it to work because, you know what, this is the anniversary of my brother being shot and killed in front of me. And I just can't take it today. I'm on the verge of breaking down. I shouldn't be on the road driving to work.
We got to be open about it, though, right? I mean... Yeah, people suffer with mental illness in silence, okay, and disabilities in silence. If I'm an employer and I don't know all of this, right, then how? Obviously, I have to be empathetic, right? But for me to be empathetic, I also need to know. And so we can't suffer in silence. And that is what's important about the community and the social well-being. And we got to socially interact with people, not with technology, right? We need to put, we need a phone holiday, and where we actually communicate with people, have conversations, real conversations, and get back to that. Because I think what helps people who have mental illness is to be able to discuss it and then talk to them and find solutions. You can't find a solution when you don't know or you can't express your problem.
And there's, I mean, there's a strong link between perpetual debt and depression in our society as well.
Debt is a whole lot of topic, right? So, and debt has a lot to do with personal choice.
And even in this society, the typical bohemian, they want to go on a vacation, let's get a loan. They want to get this, let's get a loan. They want a new car, they can't afford the car, let's get a loan. And then they'll have a loan from this bank, from that bank, from this credit union. And by the time their paycheck comes in, 70% is already spent out and they're not getting anywhere. All they're doing is trying to tread water without their head sinking down.
Yeah.
And they don't have the motivation because they know that they're never going to get out of that debt. And too many Bahamians, men and women, get into that debt too early in life.
We have a lot of lending institutions that get into that. So it's on both sides, right?
Predatory lenders. Yeah. Predatory lenders, so, yes.
Let's blame them too.
And I mean, using the credit card, the average credit card is 21-23% interest. It's nothing free in life. All you're doing is creating more debt, and you'll never pay it off.
No such thing as easy money.
And when we look at the average Bahamian, what is the savings of an average Bahamian? Does the average Bahamian have $2,000 in the bank? No.
It's rough.
The average Bahamian lives month to month or biweekly. They can't go 1 month without work. So we're teetering on the edge. We're living on the razor's edge. And for the average person, maybe they're living like that when they're 29. They'll still be living like that when they're 69, even worse.
Brother, we still have hope. There's educational opportunities out there, and people can come out of poverty through education. You and I are examples of that, right? And that's how you get opportunities, right?
Correct.
And we just need to be personal choice. We need to make choices that will, help us to live wholesome lives. We got to take care of ourselves. We got to take care of our community. Take care of our country. That's what we have to do, and that's what we got to continue to preach.
Yeah, that's what I say. Education is the key,
yeah.
And not only in terms of improving you and getting to a better circumstance, but also in terms of health, education is all important. If you know what the disease process is, what causes the disease process, we always talk about being preventative. We always talk about not just being reactionary. Let's live longer. Let's live better, Bahamas. Thank you, Dr. Wesley Francis, for an interesting talk. We'll talk again next week. This is Prostate Cancer Awareness Month, September.
Yes.
We'll talk about that in detail next week. Have a good and safe week, Bahamas.
Good evening, Bahamas.